Hello, hello. Thank you for being with us today. I'm excited for today's episode, but wanted to take a quick moment to talk about prenatal vitamins. As a doula, I encourage my clients to achieve optimal nutrition through food. However, even with the most thoughtfully planned diet, it is nearly impossible to meet the daily requirements through food alone. Ideally, you should start taking a prenatal before you find out you're pregnant, or as soon as you test positive. P.S. If this is you, congrats. Prenatal vitamins help nourish and support your body while helping you grow that cute little human inside. Nutrients like choline and folate in prenatal vitamins support healthy brain and spinal cord development in early stages of pregnancies. Prenatal vitamins are unfortunately not all made the same. My favorite prenatal brand is called Needed. I first discovered them through our Facebook community, actually. They are very supportive of our community and have secured 20% off to all of our mamas with code VBAC20. Go to thisisneeded.com and enter in code VBAC, VBAC20 at checkout for 20% off. Hello, Women of Strength. It's the VBAC link, and we have a VBA2C story coming your way. Have you ever wondered what VBA2C means? If you haven't noticed, in the VBAC world, there's a lot of acronyms, and VBA2C is one of them. That means vaginal birth after two cesareans, meaning that you've had two cesareans and want to go for a vaginal birth or had a vaginal birth. So, big question, what are the chances of having a vaginal birth after two cesareans? Is it possible? The answer is simply yes, it is totally possible. And myself and Aisha are living proof today that it is possible. In fact, your chances of a successful VBA2C are actually similar to those of just a VBAC with one cesarean. ACOG recommends that VBA2C is a safe option. And so today I want to kind of quickly go over a little bit more instead of a review about some education on vaginal birth after two cesarean and share more about our blog. So like I said, ACOG recommends that vaginal birth after two cesarean is actually a safe option. They say it is reasonable to consider women with two previous low transverse cesarean deliveries to be candidates for TOLAC. Now again, here's another of those, one of those acronyms, TOLAC, trial of labor after cesarean. I know that it is triggering to some. It is pretty much just the medical term of saying that you are having a trial of labor after cesarean. So try not to let it impact too much, but for TOLAC, and to counsel them based off of the combination of other factors that affect their probability of achieving a VBAC. So there's lots of things that people might go look through to see if you are eligible for a VBAC after two cesarean. Now, I'm sure you've probably heard this before, but proven pelvis. If you haven't had a proven pelvis, meaning that your baby has come out vaginally before you've had a vaginal birth or a cesarean. Now, when I say this, sometimes we have a vaginal birth and then all of a sudden we'll have two cesareans and then someone wants to go for a VBAC again, so that they would be considered a proven pelvis or even proven cervix to a medical staff. But if you haven't had a proven pelvis, I hope you guys can imagine my air quotes right now, that doesn't mean that you shouldn't be considered someone who can have a VBAC. This is more important to note, and this is in our blog, it says more important to note that there is no mention of requirement to have had that previous vaginal delivery. So I just wanted to point that out. It really is not a necessary thing. I hadn't had a vaginal birth before. My cervix also hadn't made it to 10 centimeters before. So just know that it is still possible. So quickly, there are things that you can do to minimize uterine rupture, and there's also things that you can do to increase your chances of VBAC. Again, it's going to be in our blog, so I'm going to send you over there after the episode so you can go and read more about it. But some of the things that you can do to minimize the risk of uterine rupture is staying away from induction. Now, can VBAC be induced? Yes, they can. Yes, 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 you can. So I just don't want you to like totally freak out right now. But staying away from induction for VBAC is better than going to get induced. It does increase our chance of uterine rupture, and it does increase our chances of other things like interventions that are unnecessary. So unless it's absolutely necessary or totally desired, Try to stay away from induction. Avoid augmentation of labor. So things like Pitocin and other drugs to help cause the uterus to contract more than it naturally would. Okay. All right, let's see. Avoid providers who aggressively intervene or want to manage your labor or come at you with fear-mongering tactics. You guys are gonna hear some of that here. And honestly, I think it's a common thing within these stories. We are getting a lot of fear-mongering happening. And providers, if you're listening, knock it off. Goodness gracious, we do not need to add fear to already something that is been looming over us because VBAC has such a bad rap in the world and it's so scary. Again, air quotes, guys. Just stop with the fear mongering. So avoid providers that are going to build you up with things like, I should say, tear you down, but fill you up is what I mean to say with things like, well, your baby's looking too big. I don't know. We should probably induce, or I don't know if your baby's going to be able to come out because you're really small and that baby's looking really big. Or, oh my gosh, you have to have an epidural. Or, oh my gosh, you have to have your baby by 39 weeks. There are so many things that just, ugh, it's annoying. Okay, going back to avoiding rupture. So, avoid or delay things like getting an epidural if later, until at least the end, if possible, because we do know that sometimes when we get an epidural early in labor, it can bring things like interventions, and then we are getting Pitocin that is too high and things like that. So there are so many other things here, you guys, and I'm gonna make sure that this link is in the show notes. And I don't want to take too much of our time so we can make sure that Aisha can share her beautiful VBAC after two cesarean stories and all that she had done to lead up to this experience. You guys, it's a good one. And something that is very different about this episode is she actually had a dehiscence with her second, which in a lot of the studies and literature for rupture, a dehiscence is often confused or combined with uterine rupture. So I really love that this is a different type of story here. So gear up and enjoy. Hi, my name is Megan. Welcome to the VBAC Link podcast. I am a VBAC after two C-section mama, a wife, doula, and VBAC educator. This podcast was created to hold space for those wanting to know their options for birth after cesarean. It is a space where you will likely find yourself getting better educated, relate to stories like your own, and finding the inspiration to help you have a better birth experience. Although we will be sharing stories related to cesarean and VBAC, this podcast is for anyone and everyone who wants to receive evidence-based information and learn how to avoid unnecessary or undesired cesareans. The purpose of this podcast is to educate and inform. It is not meant to replace advice from any other medical professional. All right, Aisha, thank you again so much for being here. As we were talking about earlier, VBAC after two cesareans is so highly requested in our community. So without further ado, I want to turn the time over to you.
Thank you so much for having me. This is surreal. I feel like this kind of like pushed me in some ways. It was a goal of mine. I'm like, if I make it, if I do my VBAC after two cesarean, I'm gonna send my story to the VBAC link. And yeah, I've listened to you guys. It's been literally almost 4 years listening to you guys all the time, trying to visualize my birth after hearing other people's stories. So it's such a blessing and an honor to be here, to be honest.
Well, thank you so much.
Of course. So yeah, I mean, if we start from the beginning with my whole birthing journey, I got pregnant in 2018. I really wanted to try out the whole natural route. So I went with the midwife. Here in Canada, it's covered by the government. So whether you go to a midwife or to an OBGYN, it's honestly the same thing. It really depends on what type of care you want to have. So I chose to go with the midwife and I chose to give birth at a birthing center for my firstborn. Labor started, never ended up giving birth naturally. Obviously, I ended up having a 60-hour labor. And yeah, and after 60 hours, they declared me failure to progress. And I think my cervix was a bit swollen at that point. And the baby had made the meconium in my tummy.
Oh, yeah, stressing
Yeah,
out, which is
exactly.
common. Babies poop sometimes, and it doesn't
Yes.
always mean emergency or anything like that, but when it's happening and other things are happening.
Exactly. And I think I started having a fever and stuff like that. So at that point, they came to see me. They're like, you know what? Before things turn out to be an emergency, let's just go and have like a very simple C-section. I felt very defeated because I had truly worked hard for that natural birth. I did 40 hours of those, 60 hours all natural. But after seeing that I wasn't progressing, so when I was with my midwife, I was at a 2 centimeters after 40 hours. At that point, I requested to be transferred to the hospital to get an epidural. And when I got the epidural, it worked a little bit, half of my body, but I think I was having back labor. My baby was posterior, so
Posterior.
yeah, so it did not do much for those pains there. So I can say in the moment I was quite relieved to have the C-section, so we can get it. Everything can be over. But I know afterwards I felt very, I know womanhood is not defined by how you birth your baby, but I think at that point, because that's just what I envisioned, I never envisioned a C-section ever in my life. It kind of affected me. It affected my self-esteem a little bit. So right after that, me being me, I'm such a planner and such a, researcher. I researched to see if it's possible to have a vaginal birth after cesarean, and I discovered the whole VBAC world. And I got and signed up into all the Facebook groups that you can find about VBACs all around the world, reading stories. And I discovered the VBAC link at that point, started listening to the podcast. And I also requested through my midwife my block up notes to
Your
see
op
what happened.
reports.
Yes. I'm
Yes.
like, okay, I need to know what happened during the cesarean, why was the cesarean made, and et cetera. So I checked, I sat down with my midwife at my 6 weeks postpartum checkup, and we read through it. And honestly, there was nothing really. They just said that it was failure to progress. I had dilated to a 7. And that was that. So I'm like, okay. She's like, you can come back when you get pregnant again. You need to wait the 2 year, 18 months before getting pregnant, or what they say. And
That's
so yeah,
very common.
so that's what I did. I got pregnant when my firstborn, I think, was 15 months, and I gave birth exactly 2 years later, almost on to the dot. So that labor started, everything was going great. I remember for that pregnancy, I tried to always sit leaning forward, doing all those exercises because I'm like, my baby was posterior. I
Posterior,
want to
yeah.
keep a good posture. I did all the things. It was in winter here, and in winter Canada, it's not the best. So I wasn't walking as much, and it was COVID too. It was COVID lockdown. I know with my first, I was going to the mall a lot, but during lockdown in 2021, all the malls were closed. So I wasn't going outside much, but I was doing rounds in my house, going up and down the stairs and stuff like that. And when labor started, I tried really to focus. I think I was doula-ing myself. I never got a doula, but I was doula-ing with all my research, with what I knew to do. And at some point, I felt like it was time to go to the midwife. I called her. I went there. They checked me. I was at a 2 centimeters again, after laboring for maybe 15 hours. Then I was a bit defeated. I'm like, well, no, the same story is gonna happen twice. Then I continue laboring there, and at some point the contractions were back to back with no breaks. So at that point I'm like, you know what, let me be a smart girl and go get the epidural again. She checked me, I was at a 3 centimeters, and I wasn't progressing, I mean, fast enough for me. I think I was just too much in pain. I wasn't getting any breaks. So I went to the hospital. I got there. I think the car ride did something because when it was a 20-minute car ride from the midwife birthing center to the hospital, and I was on a 7 centimeters.
Whoa, so you went from a 3 to a 7 in 20 minutes.
In 20 minutes. And then I was like,
Wow.
okay, it's happening. I got there. My midwife had already called the hospital, sent my papers. So the anesthesiologist was waiting for me. Got the epidural within 5 minutes. And then they checked me. I was at a nine. It went really fast. I'm like, okay, I'm getting this VBAC. Everybody was exciting. I started laughing, giggling. My midwife came in, and we were there waiting for, the last little bit. And then they checked me. I was at a 9.5, but baby was stationed pretty high. They're like, okay, well, maybe let's try to bring your baby down. And they made me change positions. But as they were doing that, the baby heart rate dropped. And it wasn't picking back up. So at that point, it turned into an emergency C-section. The doctor looked at me. She's like, your baby's in distress. We don't know why. We're trying position. Nothing is going on. Nothing is changing. We're gonna bring you to the block up and get your baby out. We don't have a choice. I was so sad because I was like, I'm at 9.5, I'm almost there, and but it did not happen. When I was in the operation room, the doctor screamed to me. She's like, Aisha, never do this again. And then I'm like, why? And she never gave me any more explanation. So me being me, when I finished giving birth, I requested the notes again to
Hey,
see.
listen, this is what I would suggest for anybody and everybody who's had a C-section. Go get your notes all the
Yeah.
time. Go get your notes.
I feel like they give you so much insight to what happened because nobody knows unless like this is the only thing that remains with you, right? You don't have the people to talk to, etc. So I saw the notes and I saw that my C-section scar had started to open. I think they call it dehiscence.
Dehiscence. So
Yes.
it was past a window. It wasn't just like
Yes.
stretched. It
No.
actually had dehisced.
Yes.
Okay.
And my midwife is like, probably that's the reason why she's told you never to do this again, not going back for a VBAC again, because your uterus has started to open. And because of that, because it had started to open, when she cut me up, it gave me kind of like a J scar. So my scar, so
So
instead
you have
of
a
J,
special scar
I
too.
have a special scar too. So at that point, I'm like, okay. And she told me, my midwife, she's like, unfortunately, here we cannot. If you have a third baby, we can only follow VBAC after one C-section. We cannot follow VBACs after two cesarean. So you're gonna have to go with the OBGYN route. Then I got scared because I'm like, my God, now I'm gonna go with the medical professionals. They're gonna turn me down and stuff like that. So me being me, I contacted my personal OBGYN. I went to see her. I wasn't pregnant or nothing. I wasn't planning to be pregnant anytime soon, but I knew I would want a third child. So I went to see her. I'm like, listen, this is my story. This is my situation. I really want to try for vaginal birth. I know it can happen. I went on the Facebook groups again. I s registered into all the VBAC after multiple cesareans. I went and I checked VBAC special scars.
Scar,
I went into all those groups and I saw that it was possible. Women were doing it all around the world. I'm like, why not me? You know what I mean? Like, my body is also capable. Plus, I got to 9.5. That means my body is working. I just had unfortunate circumstances. That's how I thought. And my doctor was like, you know what? Get pregnant, come back, and we'll talk about it. She wasn't closed off to the idea. So I'm like, okay. Fast forward, I got pregnant earlier in 2023. I lost that baby due to a miscarriage and I got pregnant again in September. And that kind of was a surprise pregnancy. We wasn't really planning for it. So when I got pregnant, I'm like, okay, this is it. Like, this is, we're gonna try to do everything we
Everything you
learned,
can and you've
everything we
known,
can to make it happen. I know for the first 20 weeks, I also just tried to relax and release. I feel like our body holds so much tension, and I feel like that can lead up to birth. So I was really trying to let go and kind of like deal with all those how can I say, traumas and things like that that I haven't dealt with my previous birth. So I went
Traumas,
back.
triggers, past experiences,
Triggers.
the
Yes.
tension that's being harbored into your body. It's
Yes.
weird to think that, but really, we can harbor tension, whether or not we relate to it as trauma or not, all in our
Yes.
body, and it can impact us.
And it can really impact us. And I had, after my second birth, I had gone to a pelvic floor to go to pelvic floor therapy. I had done that for a couple months and then had stopped 6 months prior to getting pregnant for the officially for, with my last baby. And so when I got pregnant, I went back to see my pelvic floor therapist. I'm like, listen, I'm pregnant. This is what we're planning. You know, right now, I just want to make sure that my muscles all down there is okay. You know what I mean? Like, I just want to do the exercises, not do too much, but just prep my body slowly but surely. So we started doing exercises. So that was the first 20 weeks. The second 20 weeks, I'm like, okay, now it's time to ask my doctor all the questions. I would see her every 6 weeks. And within those 6 weeks, every question that would come in my head, I will write it down in the note, in my notes, and go and ask her the questions so she can answer. And I ask her to review my upper,
Up
my not,
reports.
yes, exactly. I'm like, so I can have her opinion. And I was asking her a lot of questions about VBACs after two cesarean. I think the luck that I got is that my doctor is very, I wouldn't say VBAC friendly. I think she's pro woman choice friendly. You know what I mean? So she goes with what you want and she supports you wholeheartedly in your decisions. And I remember asking her questions about VBACs after C-section, and she kept telling me, she's like, Aisha, I think you need to realize that new studies have shown that there's not much risk after one and two cesarean. It's almost the same. Like in terms
It
of
is.
percentage, it doesn't go up. Like there's not much difference, right? So if you had a C-section, you have the same chances as having a second C-section. Those are what new studies are showing. And then I ask her about my dehiscence, and she's like, a lot of women, even if they didn't have a C-section, can have a dehiscence. It's just that some women, we don't see it because they never
They're
get the
not getting opened up in a cesarean.
exactly in a cesarean. And she's like, it happens more than you think, and it doesn't mean it's because of your scar that you had the dehiscence. It could have just been that's just how your body reacted. So she gave me all those information that kind of reassured me a little bit. I'm like, okay, I'm not risking my baby. I'm not At the same time, you know, you read stories and you just don't want to make foolish decisions, even though in your heart you know what you want. When you listen to the outside world, it can influence a little bit how you're thinking, and you're trying to make a wise decision. So that was me in that second part of my pregnancy. However, the one thing she told me, she's like, the one thing though that can make or break your VBAC is getting a doula. Every time she would see me, she's like, did you get your doula? Did you get your doula? Did you get your doula? So I got a doula that also had a VBAC. I thought for
Oh,
me,
yay.
it was very important to have someone who had the experience of having a VBAC. I feel like when your team knows how bad you want it and what it means to you, I feel like it changes a lot for your game. And I remember having my little pre-birth classes with her, and she kept telling me, she's like, you need to build a team that believes in your goal more than you
Yes.
believe in your goal,
Yes.
because at some point in the birth, you're gonna doubt yourself, and you need people who are going to reinforce you with confidence and, you know, like
Positivity.
positivity that you
Yes.
can do it and that your body was meant for this.
Yes.
And of course, within that too, we also prepped in the occasion of a possible C-section, how to have a gentle C-section, things that I would want to have. And for me, it was very important to see my babies being born. That's one thing I've never experienced with both of my daughters. You know, I just heard them cry, but there was this blue wall in front of me. I've never seen them come to
Come
life,
out of
come
yes,
out of me. And so we also prepped for that. But yeah, we did a lot of prepping. She suggested me to go see an osteopath with my second daughter. My first VBAC, I had gone to see a chiropractor, but she told me osteopath might help loosen up some muscles. So I went to see that person, and it felt good. And then I did acupuncture at the same time, which also I think it was mainly just to release and relax and let go. And I think there was a lot of little things that I did in order to just not hold on to all the stress, writing letters, closing up chapters. I feel like it allowed me to just let go of the traumas that I had. Fast forward to my due date for my second baby. I lose my mucus plug, a good part of my mucus plug. I send her to my doula. She's like, okay, I think your body's starting to work. And I was having, now I can say there were contractions, but my way I think that I handled this birth was denial. So the whole time that was having those contractions, I kept saying, you know what? They're painful Braxton Hicks. They're painful Braxton Hicks, and that's what we're gonna do. So I kept walking a lot, and those every day I was taking like an hour walk. And during those hour walk, that's when I was listening to the podcast and listening to stories and literally go and look for VBAC after two cesarean stories and hearing what women went through and how they, you know, their tips and tricks. And so that happened on at my 40 week due date. And then the contractions kept going. During the daytime, they will spread out a little bit. At nighttime, they will be every 10 to 15 minutes. They will even wake me up from sleeping. So I knew, I think deep down, they were something was going on, but I was not trying to put my heart into it. I'm like, they're just Braxton Hicks. So that kept on going for 2 days. At 40 weeks and 3 days, I had my doctor's appointment. And I remember waking up that morning being like, oh, those Braxton Hicks are really pushing. And I remember my husband's like, do you think we should go and drop off the girls at their godmother? And I'm like, you know what? No, like I don't think this is it yet. You know what? We're gonna drop them. I had my appointment that afternoon. I'm like, I have a friend of mine that lives next to my doctor's office, and she has a 6-month-old baby at that time. I'm like, you know what? Let's drop the girls at my friend's. And then afterward, we can go and I can snuggle up with the baby because I heard oxytocin, babies give oxytocin, and he helps, it might help get everything going. I went to see my doctor. My doctor asked me if I wanted to get checked. That's one thing too. I did not want to the whole pregnancy to get checked. I know, I knew at that point, I learned that dilation means nothing. And there's also how face you are and the baby station. Those are also other things that you must know. And you can be at a 10 but be stationed at -2. It doesn't mean your baby's still coming. You know what I mean? Like there's a lot of little details that I
That
discovered.
we don't talk about. We
No.
don't talk about. We focus so highly on that big 10
Yes.
number when there's so much more. It's funny because with my clients, I'll talk to them about, like, they'll be like, oh, I got checked and I was only this centimeter. And I'm like, okay, I don't even care about the centimeter. What were you a face? They're like, I don't know. They didn't
I
say
don't,
anything.
yeah.
And I'm like, next time if you get checked, if you decide to get checked, ask, because that number is like a cooler number, in my
Yes,
opinion. Like,
yes.
let's get a face. Let's do that. And even then, we know that that can change. We can go
That,
from
yes.
thick, hard, posterior to completely open and thin.
Yes.
It all varies and it varies quickly, but there's so many other things to focus on than just that big 10 number.
Not exactly. So that's why I never asked to get checked the whole time. I'm like, I'm gonna go like that without checking, and that'll be that. So when I got there, my doctor kind of knew. So when she's like, yeah, you're not getting checked, right? Again, every appointment she will ask, I'm like, no, I'm not getting checked today. And then she asked me, she's like, are you having contractions? I'm like, well, I lost my mucus plus and I'm having painful Braxton Hicks. She's like, how painful? I'm like, well, people will call it contractions while calling it Braxton Hicks. She's like, okay, just keep doing what you're doing. The baby's coming. However, when you go to the hospital, if ever you don't give birth by 41 weeks, we have to send you to do a non-stress test to the baby. And the hospital, once they're going to read your report, they're going to force you to have a C-section. Be ready. So she was kind of like prepping me to really, she's like, I'm going to write in your file. It's VBAC after two cesarean. We spoke about it. You're going to do a trial of labor. I'm letting you go. And she was quite confidently okay to let me go at least till like 41, 5, 42 weeks. So
More
she
what
wasn't,
evidence shows,
yeah.
okay?
She wasn't putting me any stress. And she told me, she's like, the one thing that gave her really some confidence is the fact that my body went into labor by itself twice. So she knew my body would go into labor and my body knows what to do, right? So I left that appointment, went to my friend's house, snuggled up with the baby. And every time I would take the baby, my contractions, the painful Braxton Hicks, will be every five, they will come more often than not. So the moment we left her house, I'm like, okay, I don't have the baby no more, but the painful Braxton Hicks kept on going. And we did the car ride. It was a 30-minute car ride to my house. I got to my house. I didn't say nothing to my husband. I took my daughters, went and gave them a bath. And while I was giving them a bath, I was showering with them. Actually, it was a shower. I was showering with them and I was on my knees. And at some point, I had to like stop and be like, okay, those Braxton Hicks are quite painful. I gave the girls a shower. I dressed them up. They went to bed, came downstairs, saw my husband, and then were like, you know what? Yeah, I think the Braxton Hicks are becoming more and more painful. It's like, okay, do you want me to pack up the car? I'm like, no, they're still Braxton Hicks, so we're not there yet.
Taking a quick break to continue our earlier conversation about the importance of the right prenatals for pregnancy and beyond. As I mentioned, my favorite brand is Needed. Pregnancy and postpartum are the most nutritionally intensive times for a woman's life. You don't have to feel so terribly nauseated or so depleted in the postpartum stage. A prenatal multi that optimally nourishes you can make all the difference between just getting by during and after pregnancy and feeling your very best. Let's not just survive, we definitely need and deserve to thrive. Needed is clinically backed, third-party tested, and formulated the best, in my opinion, prenatal vitamins. They took so much time to learn about women and why we are getting the bare minimum nutrients, and then designed the supplements that addresses women's needs at every stage of pregnancy and beyond. Needed's prenatals are filled with the optimal amount for both you and your baby and include important ingredients such as choline, folate, vitamin D, and more. Enjoy 20% off at thisisneeded.com with code VBAC20. That is thisisneeded.com and use code VBAC20. Back to today's episode.
Then what really made me believe that I was in labor, whenever I'm in labor, I always, my bowel movements, I think my body just releases everything
it's
and clears
common.
out.
Very common. Yep.
So I went to the bathroom twice in the span of 30 minutes. Then I came back the second time and I looked at him like, I think we're in labor because the contractions, they're just, that's the moment I used contractions for the first time. Like the contractions are really there, and I just went to the bathroom twice. So yeah. And then he's like, okay, eat and drink, because those are two things I never did with my previous labors. And one thing my doula told me during the prep, she's like, you need to hydrate your body, because a muscle that's dehydrated is a muscle that's going to contract even more.
Yeah.
And then she's like, maybe that's why you were contracting your contractions with your second labor, it was back to back with no breaks. And I'm like, yeah, I wasn't drinking water. I was so dehydrated, my lips were all cracked. And like, ooh, it was really, I was not drinking an ounce of water. So when my husband heard, okay, labor is starting, we started drinking, and I ate dinner. It was around 9 p.m. We bought those maple water because we heard maple water is filled with electrolytes. So I started drinking that. Then we went upstairs. I'm like, you know what? I'm going to go get some rest, try to sleep a little bit since it's nighttime. Went to bed. It wasn't comfortable. Stayed there for 15 minutes. I could not. Then I'm like, okay, I'm going to go run myself a shower. My husband got me in the shower. It wasn't helping. I'm like, okay, we're going to run a bath. I went in the bath, stayed there for maybe 30 minutes. It was not comfortable. Then I got up, I went to pee, and then I had my bloody show. Everything was out. Sent a photo to my midwife. She's like, okay, to my doula. She's like, okay, get ready. I think, you know, your body is really doing a lot right now. So I'm like, you know what? In my head, I'm like, since my body's doing, it's working right now, let me help it. I'm going to go sit on the toilet. I heard it's a dilation station. So I'm like, I'm going to go sit there and hopefully... My, you know, like I'm already in pain. So if I'm in pain, let me make it effective.
Right.
I sit there. Believe me or not, that was the best position for me.
I loved it too.
I loved it. And I'm like, I was at peace. I had the light turned off, sound, rain sound going. And then I was literally sleeping. But when I say sleeping, I was snoring. This is like I got, and I was waking up slightly just for like contractions, and then I was going back to bed. I never timed any of my contractions, so we were like, you know what, we're not gonna focus on timing, we're really gonna go with how we feel, and the sounds and stuff like that. And yeah, I stayed there I think for 2.5 hours, 3 hours on the toilet.
Wow.
And it felt so great. I had a pillow, I slept there, and at some point, I think they were picking the contractions. You could hear in my sound, it was a bit more there. My doula was hearing me, and she told my husband, "You know what? I think this is time. Like, you guys need to pack up the kids
Go.
and go to the hospital." We're about, 35 minutes, 40 minutes away from the hospital, so we had quite a drive. So my husband packed up the car, and around 2 a.m., we left to the hospital. I remember prior to labor, I told myself, I'm gonna give myself some coping mechanism. So as long as I'm at home, I'm just gonna do nothing and really try to take it in. And once I'm in the car, I bought those combs. I'm like, I'm gonna have one comb
Yes.
in my hands for the car ride. And then once really contractions are unbearable, I'm gonna grab the second comb so both hands can be. So in the car ride, I had that one comb and I took it. We went to the hospital. But the contractions were so great. I had time to do curbside walking around the hospital when we got there. My girl's godmother came and met us at the hospital so we can transfer the girls. And then while they were doing that transfer, I was doing curbside walking. I was taking photos. I'm like, oh, I need to take photos of my girls. Like, I was in such a happy mood. And the contractions were really spread out, I feel like, which is the first for me because all my other labors, the moment I get to the hospital, it's
Boom,
emergency.
boom,
You
boom.
have, I cannot control myself. So we got there, we got to the hospital. I was able to give them my name, fill out my papers. I was really clear-minded. I went into triage and I was a bit scared because all of my other labors, whenever I get checked, I'm like at 1 centimeter or 2 centimeters. I'm
Two,
like, oh, I'm gonna go see what am I? But you know what? We can handle it because the contractions were still spread apart. So I'm like, if ever it's a two, I'm still gonna be good. I lay down, I get checked, and then they tell me you're at 5 centimeters. I'm like, oh my God. And then I asked them, like, what's the station and how effaced am I? And then they're like, you're 80% effaced and you're at the station minus two. And I'm like, okay, like this is it. We're doing it. They're like, we're admitting in you. You're not gonna go to home. And I was so excited. However, that's where the battle kind of started. They went, took my file, came back. They're like, well,
Darn it.
we see you had two cesarean already. You know, usually you need to have a C-section after two C-section. After yeah, after you have two C-section. I'm like, well, I discussed with my doctor, and she was all okay for me doing the trial of labor. They're like, well, no, this is not usually how things go. We usually don't do that. You know, there's a lot of risk for your baby. I'm like, yeah, I know the risk, and you know what? Like, I'm okay with it. Like, it's something me and my doctor discussed, and we're very at peace with it. Then they sent me the doctor on call that night, and the doctor came, and she's like, well, you know, like, I need to explain to you the dangers of what you're about to do. You know, your baby might die. You know,
Oh,
when you have a second
goodness.
C-section. And then they brought the dehiscence. They're like, you know, your body already with your other trial of labor, you had a dehiscence, and you know, like this is not good. Like, your body, if you have a dehiscence, you're more prone to uterine rupture. I'm like, well, all those notes were observed, were looked at by my doctor, and she was completely fine with it. And literally, the doctor looked at me, and she's like, I can see nothing I'm gonna say will not make you change your mind. You're quite informed. I'm like, yeah. She's like, I'm gonna give you release papers so you can release the hospital of anything. And you know, at that moment, you're kind of, it kind of feel like you're doing something not great because you're like, they're making me sign
Pushing
release
it.
papers.
Yeah, you feel like you're pushing against what
Against.
everyone in the professional world that have done multiple years of school are suggesting, and it feels off.
It feels off. But
Yeah.
you know what? I think that's why I was talking about releasing and really listening to me. That made me feel so much more at peace because I'm like, I had to listen to that voice inside. I'm like, Aisha, you can do this. You prepped for this for literally, this is 4 years in the making since your first C-section. You're educated, you know the risk. It's not a paper that's gonna make those risks change. You were already okay with it before they presented that paper to you.
Right.
You can still be
Yeah.
okay with it after. So they gave me the paper. I signed everything, and then they asked me. They're like, "Well, we need to keep you monitored. However, we need to keep you monitored, and we need to have the easy access port installed in case there's a
The
C-section
HEPLOCK.
And then I told them, oh, I don't want it because it wasn't my birth plan. I'm like, I don't want that. I also had a super cute pink floral hospital, like my hospital gown. I'm like, I'm gonna wear that. I don't wanna wear their hospital gowns. I think it's just for the mental, not to feel like a
Yes.
patient, but feel like you are the birther and you are the principal actor in your event, right? I didn't want to feel like a patient. So
Yeah.
I'm like, I don't wanna they came, they're like, you need to change. I'm like, I don't want to change. I want to keep my gown. And then I need
Yeah.
to sign the release paper that I was okay, that they cut off my gown. I'm like, listen, the gown is made for that. Like, you can literally, there's buttons all around the back. You can do it. But if you have to cut it off. But I'm keeping the gown. But at the end, I felt like I had to somewhat be political a little bit, give them a little so they can also stop bugging me because they were breaking my bubble, you know, like the constant questions, the constant arguing. Within all of that, I was still having contractions. You know what I mean? So I'm like, you know what? I'm gonna let them monitor the baby, and I'm gonna let them do the easy port, so they can allow me, so they can stop casting their opinion on my VBAC. So I know my doula was a bit scared, especially for the monitoring, because they're like, the second the heart rate is gonna drop, they're gonna use that as a way to send you to the operation room. And I know, like, the second they put the monitor, the baby's heart rate went down during a contractions and went back up right after. And the one of the nurses, like, see, your baby's heart rate is already going down. Like, this is why we need to keep it.
My
And then I
goodness.
had the doula on the other line. She was coming to the hospital, and she's like, you know, and I asked, I'm like, the baby's heart is going down. She's like, Aisha, it's normal that your baby's heart is going down during contraction. He's literally getting
He's
squeezed.
calming
You
down.
know, it's just normal practice. Like, if it comes back up, it's completely fine. So every time they would pass those comments, the baby's heart, I think it dropped a couple of times, probably like 7 to 8 times the whole labor process. But every time they would make a comment, oh, see, dropped again, oh, see, dropped again. But it kept picking back up the whole time. Anyways, I got admitted into my room. They tried to do the easy access port, and I have very small veins, so it literally took the anesthesiologist to do it. The whole nursing team failed to do it, and I kept telling them to do it in one spot that usually people have better luck, and they did it everywhere else in that part. And at the end, it's that part that functioned. So by the time they did the easy port access, it was around 7 a.m. I got to the hospital at 4. It was around 7 a.m. and I asked to be checked again because at that point, I was doing dances. My body, the contractions were so intense. I was not happy. I was not laughing no more. I was still having breaks between them, but it was really taking everything out of me. And at that point, like the whole time before that, I was really enjoying the contractions. They were coming. I was like, oh, this is nice. I'm getting to meet my baby. I love the feeling, to be honest. People find me weird when I say I love contractions, but at that point, it was not fun anymore. And I was going against the wall and like doing those squat dances and moving my body left to right. I requested to be checked. They checked me. They're like, oh, you're at 9.5, 100% effaced. However,
Great.
baby was still station minus 2. And I'm like, oh no, the baby's still pretty high up. So my doula and I started doing some positions to get the baby down. We did that for 30 minutes, but like I said, contractions were really, really, really pushing it. So I requested to get checked again. And I know my doula is like, no, nothing probably happened. And she was right, nothing happened. It was still the same 9.5, a face at 100%, and still stationed to minus 2. So at that point, I'm like, okay, I'm gonna request the epidural. I was seeing stars, you know, like every time I would go through a contraction, I was still stars. And at that point, I was literally, I think mentally, I was checked out. I was fighting against the contractions, I think so, because every time a contraction would start, I would tell myself, okay, you need to survive this next one. Now it was about survival. It was no longer about enjoying it. It was
And
more,
thriving through
it
this,
was, you know what, Aisha, there's 4 breaths, take 4 deep breaths and it's done. It was more a survival mindset. So I'm like, I'm gonna take the epidural and be calm and be good. They came, they gave it to me, and they gave me a very tad bit because I was still walking. I could still feel, yeah, I was still walking with the epidural. I could still feel everything. It's just, it took off the edge. I think like
Okay.
the contractions, the pain was in the front of my belly. That pain was gone, but I could still feel the pressure. And while the anesthesiologist was giving me the epidural, I could, my body was starting to push. Like I would have like the feeling and everything. So I think he gave me a tiny bit. Anyways, the second epidural was done. It was already shift change. So the night nurses were gone. The new nurses were in. And I think this is where when I say the team makes a difference, they were angel sent. They were so kind. My doula went to see who was a doctor on call for the daytime, and she came to see me. She's like, if you didn't have your own personal OBGYN, this is the one that you would have wanted to have, like this one here, that doctor here.
Yes.
And then she came, she was super happy. She's like, okay, like I see you're trying for VBAC. Like the whole floor, when I heard about your case, they were saying that you had a uterine rupture. And I'm like, it's not right. Her doctor wouldn't let her do a trial of labor after uterine rupture. So I went and read your file and I saw that you only had a dehiscence and that,
Yes.
like it's very common. And she literally repeated the same thing that my doctor said. She's like, a lot of women that even didn't have a C-section end up having a lot of dehiscence. It's just that we never know because they are never open for C-section to, mark it down. So she's like, it's completely common. We're gonna do this. She's like, you've been at 9.5 for like 2, 3 hours and your baby station hasn't descended. Let's see what's going on. So she brought an ultrasound machine and she performed the ultrasound on me. And she literally saw that it was the baby's head position. So his head was slightly crooked to the left.
Asynclitic.
Exactly. And she's like, you know what? They came. That's what I'm telling you. I love these people. I'm still having butterflies thinking about them. They came with the mouth circuit. They came with the sheet with the images, and they're like, "We're gonna do those." I'm like, "The mouth circuit," and they're like, "Yes." And I'm like, "Oh my God, you guys are my people." So then we started doing the mouth circuit. I did every movement for 30 minutes. I held it for 30 minutes, and then I did the cowgirl, I think they call it, position
Flying
two.
cowgirl.
Exactly. And then after that, they came back, and my doctor's like, she thinks the baby's position has changed, but my water hadn't broke yet. So she's like, I'm gonna break your water. Hopefully, your baby, she's like, the worst case scenario is that your baby's heart doesn't handle it. But I think that's gonna make us go to the next level. So she broke my water literally within, she broke it. She went to check. I was ready to go. That's literally all it took. And then she's like, okay, we're gonna start pushing. I know in my birth plan, I had said I'm not gonna push on my back laying down. So I went with my four knees and I went first in my knees. I was holding onto the bed and I was pushing that way. But I was so tired and I hadn't eaten in a while. I was still drinking, so drinking was good, but I hadn't eaten. My doula gave me a candy that helped me. But I remember at that exact moment in my thoughts, I'm like, Aisha, your baby did it. This is your time now to help your baby out. This is, you've waited 4 years for this moment. This is it. Like, don't, like, you need, like, this is all you've wanted. You need to find strength somewhere and make it happen. I looked at them. I'm like, I'm gonna lay down. And then I laid down, and my doula gave me this, like, a blanket. They attached this
Some tug of war. You did some tug
exactly.
of war.
And then I was pulling on it when I was pushing, and my mom and a nurse were pushing my legs up. Yeah, and then I pushed, I pushed, I pushed, and at some point my body was pushing automatically. Whenever the contraction would come, it would literally do the like I would bear down by myself. And I know the doctor kept looking at me. She's like, wow, like this is awesome. Yeah, and then I think I pushed for 45 minutes, and then
Not bad.
was born. And my husband's actually the one who caught the baby.
Oh,
That's what we wanted.
yay.
We caught him, and we did not know the gender, so it was really fun to see. It was a boy after two daughters. Once he was born, they put him on my chest. Everybody was crying. I know the nurses were crying, the doctor was crying. I've never had a hug from a doctor, and she literally came on my bedside, hugged me. She's like, this is a moment like we don't see this often, so thank you for letting us experience this. And I know a lot of the nurses, it was almost a shift change. It was around 3 p.m. that he was born, and I know one of the nurses looked at me. She's like, my shift is ending in about 30 minutes. I need to see this. I need to witness this
Uh-huh.
happening. And then yeah, so he was born and no teeth. I think I had a first degree tear, but it was like
Okay.
on the outer lip. Like it was really,
Uh-huh.
and it was because when he was born,
Superficial.
he had his hand on his face, kind of like a Superman. So
Oh
that's
my
how he
goodness. So
was
he had a
born.
nuchal hand
He had,
too?
yes,
Oh
and there's
my.
photos of it. It's so precious. My doula took photos, and you could literally see his hand coming out. And yeah, and what was great is that that evening, that night, doctor, while she came back for her shift and she heard that I gave birth, she came to apologize. Literally, she's like, "Oh, well, I heard that you gave birth vaginally. Congrats. I wanted to, so sorry for, not supporting you in that sense. It's just, there's
Yeah.
risk and not every woman end up having great stories like yours. And but we're
Oh
so
gosh.
happy for you. And but
Yeah.
I was just happy that I proved them wrong. And then I somewhat made
Yes.
history in that hospital that, like a VBAC
Yes.
after two cesarean. It happens. It's possible. And I'm just happy that I listened to that voice inside, and that
Yeah.
all the blah blah around me, all the noise around me did not affect my initial desires.
Yeah, and overall, like your final decision, right?
Yes.
Like I've talked about this, I call it static. There's a lot of static that I feel like looms over VBAC moms, and at least it did for me. And I do see it sometimes with my clients where it's like their friends, their family, their providers, whoever it may be, they're kind of looming with this unnecessary static,
Yes.
and a lot of it is, well, there's risks and what ifs and oh, you name it, right? All so many of
Yes.
these things. And I mean, really, I took a whole bunch of notes right now of like little nuggets of your story, and I can relate in a lot of ways with your story. It's kind of similar to mine with how things unfolded, but from the very beginning, you started off right. You started off right. You found the provider, you found the team, you got the support. You got the education, right?
Yeah.
You dove in. And like you said, this was 4 years in the making. Four
Yeah.
years it took you to learn and grow and have this experience that you wanted.
Yeah.
And sometimes it takes one time to try, and I say try with quotes, but like to go and have a trial of labor and it maybe not work out like mine in your situation.
Yeah.
And then, okay. We learned from those two situations. Now, how can we learn and grow from those situations and
Yeah.
change and develop this next situation? It's so weird. My mind right now is really heavy on my daughter's reflections. They do like reflections at their school. It's like a
Yeah.
big art thing. And her topic is conquering or overcoming is the word imperfections. And I feel like sometimes in the birth world, especially as women, as you were saying earlier in your story, like we have this thing, like if we don't do it this way, if it doesn't happen this way, maybe our motherhood stripped away, or
Yes.
we failed,
Yes.
or our baby failed. We can go to as far as our baby failed us,
Yeah.
or whatever it may be. And it's just overall, it's just that no situation is perfect, right? There's
Yeah.
just always imperfections within it. And what do we do with the situation to
Yeah.
grow and transform? And I mean, really, like I mean, I went over some of it, and then just learning more about hydration and how important food is and fueling our
Yes.
bodies.
Yes.
You know,
I mean, it's a marathon, right? You cannot run a marathon without an ounce of water or food. You see it when we see people doing half marathons. There are people on the sidelines giving them water,
They're
giving them
fueling.
rides, they're fueling with them.
Yes.
It is important and necessary. And knowing that the providers, as much as yes, we do have faith in them, they are there to help us and they are there to. I don't want to say this in a bad way, but they are working with us and for us, not,
Yes.
you know what I mean? Like they don't have the final say. We have the final say.
Yes.
That doctor that was there when I told you the dream thing, when she came, she never, ever, ever does hospital rounds. She usually just does criticals.
Wow.
And people were like, even the nurses are like, well, we usually see her once or twice a year. She never comes. And that ended up being one of the one time of the year that she came.
Man.
And she came and she looked at me. She's like, Eve herself, she's like, she is pro-choice woman. She's like, when a woman makes a choice, even if they fail, she'll be happier and she'll be able to cope with the results way better than if
Yes.
somebody strips her from that choice and oblige her to do
Yep.
something that she did not consent to. The outcome
Yes.
of that will be way harder to overcome than if she's the one who made the decision, regardless of the results, right? Like
It's
she'll be able to live
so,
with that
so
way
true.
better.
Yes.
And I wholeheartedly believe that. I know I had already seen in myself if this doesn't work. And I think too, like sometimes we go into labor very naively. I feel like, I mean, every new time, first time moms and even second time sometimes it can happen. Especially if let's say you had you were going for a vaginal birth, then you have a C-section, then you're trying for another vaginal birth. It's still in some sense a first time that you're gonna experience this sort of experience. So you're still gonna go to it naively and blindly. Like I said, the first time I never thought C-section would be an option. The second time I'm like, it cannot happen to me twice. Not that it happened to me twice, I planned for it. You know what I mean? I plan in the circumstance that there will be a C-section. What do I want to happen? And I knew I had my guidelines, and at least it wouldn't have been a shocker and a hard pill to swallow. I would have been okay because I had my trial of labor. And you know what? At the end of the day, your baby does decide how they want to be born. And I feel like one thing I would advise all mamas and even fathers, we need to include them, or partners, we need to include them into that. I feel like talking to your baby makes a whole of a difference. Mine has been, I got that advice from my osteopath, where he told me a story about his wife about to be reeled in into C-section, and he came, he spoke to their daughter that was in the womb, and he's like, this is your moment, you decide if you want to go into C-section, do it, if not, this is the moment to change things. And his wife ended up having a vaginal birth right at the moment where they were going to. So I feel like my husband, I remember at some point when I was about to push, when I was starting to push, he came and saw the baby. And then he's like, you know what? This is your moment. You decide how you want to be born. You choose, and your mama is going to help you do this. So I feel like having that communication, our babies sense, they sense everything. So being connected to that too is so important. So important.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And going kind of back to just circling really quickly, if we do all the things, if we take the VBAC education course, listen to the stories, learn more, read more, learn the stats, hire the team, all the things, do our fear clearing, processing about past experiences and all of that. And then we go in and be fear-mongered, like
Yeah.
you they were trying with you, which fear-mongering is a form, the actual definition is a form of manipulation that causes fear by exaggerated rumors of impending danger. Okay, so
Yeah.
there were big things that were said, but if you hadn't done the research, the
Yeah.
education, you easily may have been fear-mongered. And sometimes it's even easy to be fear-mongered even with the education. I will
Yeah.
say that straight up. Like when you're being told your baby could die,
Yes.
that word is very, very triggering. But you were able to have the education and be like, no, I understand what you're saying. I respect what you're saying. I am going to continue moving forward this way.
Yes.
Right. But if we would be fear-mongered and not have the education and then later learn the education, overall, our experience and view and our feelings would probably, our postpartum would be a little bit more rough
Yeah.
because we're learning these things that we could have learned before. And
Yeah.
that's why education is one of the biggest tips that we can give because you need to be educated along the way because it is easy for someone to come in and look at you. Aisha had to, no.
Yeah,
How many
yeah.
times did you have to say, I understand, but no. And it sucks. It sucks that that's the reality. And trust me, it ticks me off so much.
It
I
is.
wish it would change. But
Yeah.
if we aren't educated and armored with that team, with that power, with our experience, then we are more likely going to fold in those situations.
It is completely true. At some point, even one of the nurses told me when they were trying to do the easy part that I need to stop moving because this is gonna end up with the C-section, and they really need to do the easy port.
Oh.
And I had to tell her never repeat the word C-section in front of my face.
Yes.
And you have, and it sucks that for women or people experiencing multiple cesarean or even one cesarean when they're trying to do a vaginal birth, that they need to constantly fight for it.
Yes.
But you do need to stay in your ground and really focus on what you want. And
Yep.
the fears will come, but that's a moment where you need to rely on the education that you had
Yes.
and all the process. You spent 9 months preparing yourself, so all those 9 months must count for something. You know what I mean? And
Yes.
they're
Yep.
not you, and you know, like, you're not gonna be that one person. And you tell yourself, that's what I was telling myself, like, in the case that yes, the unfortunate happens, I was at the best place at the best time, and I had the best team. That was
Yep.
my thing. I trusted in my team, and like, everything will be fine. But no, definitely, yeah, you cannot, you need to believe in yourself and
Yeah.
in your project.
Yes. Oh
Yeah.
my gosh. Well, this episode is just jam-packed with all the nuggets of information, guidance, suggestions, empowering feelings. Oh my gosh. So thank you so much for being here
Thank
with us today
you.
and
Thank you
sharing
for
your
having
beautiful
me.
story.
Yeah,
Yes.
thank you so much. It's a dream.
Oh my gosh. Well, congratulations again.
Thank you so much.
Would you like to be a guest on the podcast? Head over to thevbacklink.com/share to submit your story. For information on all things VBAC, including online and in-person VBAC classes, the VBAC blog, the worldwide database for VBAC doulas, and more, head over to thevbacklink.com. Congratulations on starting your journey of learning and discovery with the VBAC Link.
Hey everybody, I just wanted to take a quick sec to thank you all so much for listening to today's episode. We are so glad that you are here. This community is near and dear to our heart. We love you all so much. If you enjoyed today's episode, we would really appreciate it if you'd leave us a rating and review. Our whole team here at the VBAC Link actually gets to see these reviews come in, and it makes our day. A 5-star rating helps us share our podcast and gets these important messages out there. Thank you so much for listening, and we cannot wait to see you next time.